All right, welcome to the Young Turks. Jake Huger, Emma Biglin with you guys. The Vig is back.
The Vig is back. The jig is up and the Vig is back.
That's exactly right. All right, so we got fun shows for you guys today. Wait, I said shows. Why? 8 o'clock Eastern, must see TV. Arian Foster, legendary NFL running back, is going to be on between me and Huger. So check that out on twitch.tv/TYT. There's a lot of T's in there. Twitch.tv/TYT. Speaking of which, on Saturday night, also at 8 p.m. Eastern, you're going to want to be there for the first ever TYT movie night. Super fun. Brett Ehrlich is leading, and you guys are also leading because you're going to pick the movie. He's giving you a couple of options. You're going to go to tyt.com/post/movie night. The options are Dirty Dancing, obviously, Spanglish, Election, and Roadhouse. All quality movies, a little variety in there. Although Campaign should be among those, turn the page and you know what I do to your wife. All right, anyways, so twitch.tv/TYT. So Emma, have you ever had Arian Foster on your fantasy football teams?
I might have. That's a long time ago now. I mean, he's still the man, but he's been out of the league for a little bit.
Yeah.
Did he go to Miami after Houston?
He did. I even drafted him when he was in Miami. I love Arian Foster.
Yeah, he's awesome.
It turns out I love his politics too, but I love him as a player. Emma, of course, former TYT Rotis champion of the world.
Yeah, former though. I had a big fall off, big drop off this year.
Oh my God, we got three championships between us, Emma. Not a big deal.
No.
Well, I'll talk to Arian Foster about it tonight. All right, guys. One more thing before we get to awesome stories for you guys. Thermometer, let's see how we're doing. TYT.com/go. We got to keep this going. Got to be strong. Got to be healthy. Here we are, 57,713. Can I be bold and see 58,000 by the next break? Is that possible? TYT.com/go. And again, I love reading through your names. Nothing makes me happier. Seeing you guys from all across the world chipping in as much as you can. We're going to build a change machine, guys. And you're the ones that are going to do it. All right. Speaking of change, we've got change in the Trump campaign. Emma, take it away.
Oh, seamless transition, Jane. Good job. Brad Parscale, I got that name right, I think. The campaign manager for Donald Trump's 2020 bid, which is flailing, is out. He has been ousted, and Trump announced it this morning in a Facebook post. He said that he is removing his top campaign manager, Brad Parscale, and tapping deputy campaign manager Bill Stepien, a veteran Republican operative, to take over. Stepien was campaign manager for both of former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie's gubernatorial runs and served as his deputy chief of staff, but he was fired in 2014 in the Bridgegate scandal that plagued Christie. Stepien was named deputy campaign manager in May in an effort to layer Parscale, who had been campaign manager for more than 2 years, but had come under fire in the last few months for lagging poll numbers. He will keep his digital and data strategy duties, the campaign said. Parscale's role had already diminished greatly in recent weeks, with Stepien handling strategy, Jason Miller taking over messaging, and Jeff DeWitt brought in to manage finances, said a person close to the campaign. Some aides had assumed that Parscale would keep the top title in an honorary fashion, or that he would be moved into a chairman role rather than be given such a clear demotion. But that is not the Trump administration's way, not Trump's way, even though it was apparently Jared Kushner who demoted him and broke the news to him, not Trump himself. He wouldn't do that. He wouldn't get his hands dirty. But he would want to make a very public spanking out of the demotion of Parscale and humiliate him. Very Trump-esque.
Yeah, Emma, thank you for giving the world's worst visual.
That's what I'm here for. That's what I'm here for.
Yeah, okay. I cannot get that toxicity out of my mind now. All right, one more fun part of this story, and then we'll break it down and give you real facts. Because the one I'm about to tell you is not a fact, but it was fun. for a while online, there was rumors that the reason Trump fired him was not because of Tulsa or the fact that he's getting killed in the polls, but it's because there was rumors that Brent Parscale was dating Hope Hicks. And Hope Hicks is a two-time now White House advisor. And there were rumors that Trump is in love with her. She's, of course, like 50 years younger than him. And that that's why he got mad at Parscale. Now, it is definitely not true, okay?
It was like started by the Lincoln Project guy. I think that's where you trace the origin. So I don't trust anything that Rick Wilson says.
Yeah, and no, it was clearly a joke because they said they were seen canoodling at Comet Pizza. So that's a conspiracy theory place, et cetera. It's definitely a joke. Okay, now let's move on to facts that are also fun. So first of all, what Emma mentioned is awesome. They're like, normally they do face saving, like, oh, he's campaign chair. Oh yeah, I mean, he's got a chair. He's gonna sit there for the rest of the campaign. But they're like, no, no, no. Now he'll be serving under the new guy who he used to serve over. This is 100% a demotion. We wanna be super clear about it. And then it's not even a light spanking. It's a pretty heavy spanking. The only way it gets worse is if, of course, he was fired. But now he doesn't control the purse anymore. That's very relevant because he had managed to get $40 million into his own companies through the Trump campaign. I mean, he's almost Elmer Fudd. He had a mansion and a yacht paid for by Trump supporters. In fact, he had a mansion, two condos, a yacht, a Ferrari, and a Range Rover at a minimum.
You're spoiling the Lincoln Project ad we're about to tee up.
Okay. So that got under Trump's skin. But like the main reason that he's fired, though, and remember who Brad Parscale is. He's a rando from the middle of Texas that like used to do websites for cheap. So the Trump organization, which only had like 4 or 5 employees, like, oh, Trump, I'm a billionaire. No, he's not. He runs a local family mom and pop shop. It's just a mom and pop shop that his dad gave $413 million to, right? So they do everything on the cheap. So they hired this rando out of Texas, Brad Parscale, back in 2011 to manage their rinky dink websites. And then somehow he became a campaign. He has no political experience. All he has is, but he has a strong grift game, that's for sure. So, he's the grift that keeps on taking. So at some point, Trump was like, well, you took $40 million from me. You took the audience away in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and you took away my poll numbers. So I think the least I could do is take away your job. Now, having said all that, of course, the real reason Trump is losing is because of Trump.
Right. I mean, not even the most seasoned political operative could save the flailing campaign right now. The economic collapse, the pandemic, Trump has set this all up for himself. But Parscale was not completely ousted from the campaign because he's still sycophantic to the Trump family and to the Trump team. He's been close in Trump circles for a long time. So the fact that he wasn't completely out of the campaign was seen as a little bit of a token for him. It doesn't usually happen that way. People usually go out in a ball of flames. Mr. Parscale, who was handpicked by Mr. Kushner and who was close to the Trump family, lasted longer in the job than most of the people who led various iterations of Mr. Trump's 2016 campaign. And campaign aides emphasized that Mr. Parscale was being asked to stay on, unlike others who have been let go from the Trump orbit. But Mr. Parscale has no background in politics, as Cenk mentioned, and he suffered something of a mortal wound in the role 3 weeks ago when a much hyped rally in Tulsa, Oklahoma to reboot Mr. Trump's campaign was sparsely attended after Mr. Parscale boasted of nearly 1 million ticket requests, just over 6,000 people attended, womp womp, the June 20th event, an embarrassment that Mr. Trump could not let go of. The president at times berated Mr. Parscale over real and perceived transgression, sometimes screaming at him and once threatening to sue him. Trump loves threatening to sue people almost as much as he loves screaming at and berating his employees, which you see over and over again. Parscale still wants to work for this guy after now being publicly humiliated and pushed to the side in a different kind of role. And for some reason, the Trump campaign is still insisting that it's not a demotion. It's not a demotion. He's still with us. Everything is fine and good. This is what a Trump campaign advisor said on cable news today.
Let's be clear what happened here. The only thing that shifted was Donald Trump simply asked Bill to steer the ship and Brad to man the guns.
Right, because Pascal's not out altogether. He's been demoted. He'll be in a different position. Yeah. So Hogan, but
I would argue a couple things. First of all, he's not demoted. What Brad is focusing on is the digital strategy. Look, he's built something no one thought possible, raising money at clips that are at historic levels. And so Brad's going to focus on one thing. Bill's going to focus on the other. But both are working toward victory for the American people. And that means a victory for Donald Trump.
Notice how the Fox host gives him a win, concedes to his completely obvious BS framing. And he goes, no, and corrects her a second time. There's no way to get through these people. It's insane.
No. I wouldn't agree that going from CEO to intern, is that a demotion? Interns are also super important. They're really, really important. And so, look, the reason why they're bending over backwards for Pascal, who's robbed them blind, is because of Kushner. Kushner is the most powerful guy in the White House. He's arguably the president. Trump is like the public face of the tweets, and Kushner runs everything behind the scenes. Since he was Kushner's boy, it was very, very hard to oust him. I mean, this is the best they could do. And Trump's like, is it okay, Jared, if I just move him down? Is it please? I'm begging you, Jared. I'm begging you. Is it okay? And Jared apparently greenlit it that he go back to digital. So on that, look, he got humiliated. That's supposed to be his big strength, like digital campaigns. Well, he ran a digital campaign to get a lot of people to Tulsa. And an idiot thought that 1 million people were actually going to come. And didn't realize they were kids from TikTok and K-pop fans. So if you get played by a bunch of teenagers on TikTok, maybe digital isn't your strength. And maybe stealing $40 million is your strength. Anyway, and the other thing that Trump didn't like was apparently he had become too much of a celebrity in his own right. Like he'd give some opening speeches and then he had the temerity to sign his own autograph for some people. And that apparently got under Trump's skin. Trump is the biggest baby in the world by an order of magnitude. And now I want to move on to Stepien. And then Emma, you come back in with Lincoln Project or whoever else you got lined up. But the new campaign manager, this is a guy who was so unethical, he was fired by Chris Christie for Bridgegate. Like when Chris Christie thinks you're scum, like, man. And of course, Trump sees that. He's like, oh, perfect. Remember Trump's first lawyer, Roy Cohn, like legendarily bad guy, goes down in American history as one of the worst guys to ever be associated with the government. Trump doesn't see that as the bug. He sees that as the feature. Roger Stone, same thing. He's like, oh my God, you're known as a giant dirtbag? Great, you're in. You're the new guy. Hey, put him in. And then, well, you think, well, look, to be fair, maybe this guy's really good at politics. So he was the political director for the White House in 2018, during the 2018 midterm elections. Oops, that's where they got routed in the House. So failure as far as the eye can see.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, when you talk about how Kushner runs things behind the scenes, Cenk, it set off a light bulb for me because Trump can't have anyone outshining him and Kushner doesn't outshine anybody. And that's part of why he hated Pascal. Jesus, I can't say the name. He was signing autographs and everything like this. Maggie Haberman of the New York Times writes, for over a year, Mr. Pascal has been the focus of intense scrutiny and news coverage about his operation and whether he was making an outsized amount of money from the campaign. Those articles have focused attention on his purchases of property and cars in Florida, where he lives, and became a source of irritation for the president, who saw them as a distraction. Mr. Pascal was also visible in ways that campaign managers typically aren't, appearing in a campaign ad and having his name listed on fundraising events, in addition to the autograph signing that Cenk talked about. But yeah, I mean, Kushner has no charisma. He's kind of meek. And he's allowed to shuffle through and run things behind the scenes because he doesn't really threaten Trump in terms of I seek, you know, attention in the spotlight in that sense.
Yeah, I'll give Kushner this one thing, though. At least he was savvy enough, unlike the rest of them, to stay hidden. And on two counts, if you get too much media attention, Trump will fire you, even if you're his son-in-law. So he was smart enough to hide in the bushes longer than Sean Spicer. And the second reason why it's smart to hide is because then you're the man behind the curtain. Every time he speaks publicly, you're like, oh, right, he's a total idiot too. Like, you keep thinking there's somebody smart behind the scenes. No. Remember, his dad had to pay a king's ransom to get him into Harvard. And I love that story because the dumber the kid is, the more you have to pay. And I think he had to pay $2 million to get him in. So better to stay hidden, Jared. It's working out okay for you so far.
Well, yeah, just to put a button on that. So the Lincoln Project, which an organization I have a large amount of disdain for in the sense that it's run by ex-Bush aide grifters who are taking MSNBC fans' money just to needle Trump. And then I think eventually are going to try to look for something back and when Biden wins. Because look, oh, we're a super PAC. We helped you win. Super PACs definitely do things out of the goodness of their hearts. Anyway, with that preface, the Lincoln Project was running ads about Parscale and his lavish purchases, and that might have been what got under Trump's skin.
Meet Brad Parscale. From dead broke to the man Trump can't win without, Brad was getting rich. How rich? Really rich. But don't tell Donald. He'd wonder how Brad can afford so much. A $2.4 million waterfront house in Fort Lauderdale. Two Florida condos worth almost $1 million each. He even has his very own yacht, a gorgeous Ferrari, a sleek Range Rover. Brad brags about using private jets. Oh my, Brad's a star. And why not? Brad's worth every dollar. Just ask him.
So the Lincoln Project pronounced it as Parscale. I thought it was Parscale. That's what Brett Ehrlich told me. I don't know anymore. Go on, Cenk.
Yeah, well, you did say it was hard to trust the Lincoln Project. Seriously, though, they do make great ads. And the reason why that one's great, that's not going to swing any voters. Like, what does a voter in Pennsylvania care about any of that? But my God, Donald Trump, that will get under every skin he's got. The orange skin he's got is going to get blown out by that. He can't. When he sees that, he's like, I should be making that money. I should be stealing that money. I want the yacht. So nice job by the Lincoln Project on hitting two birds or two crooks with one stone. Okay, guys, we got a lot more great stories for you. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Unf***ing the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Unf***ing the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
All Hi, back at Young Turks, Cenk and Emma with you guys. So quick programming announcement. So the Majority Report's been with us for a long, long time as a network partner, of course, led by Sam Cedar. So they're going on their own now. Bless their hearts. We love them. Don't worry. Don't start any drama. There's no acrimony whatsoever, et cetera. In fact, I want to tell you where you could find them. They do a great, great show. You should keep watching them. It's just not going to be on TYT.com anymore, but you could find it at MajorityReportRadio.com. Obviously, it's on YouTube where a lot of you watch it, iTunes, among many other platforms. And look, we love having Sam on, Michael Brooks on, and we'll continue to do that. We're wonderful friends and allies. It's been great working with them for years and years and years. In case you were wondering what happened on the website, that's why I want to tell you. And in case you want to find them, that's why I wanted to give you their website. Okay, now let's read some of your comments, some of the member comments from our website. The first one's fascinating. It comes from Uger, my spirit animal. They say, Cenk's infectious energy balanced with Emma's sultry sarcasm is all I needed today. Interesting.
I don't know about sultry, but.
I don't either. But anyway, so let's go to YouTube Super Chat. C3339409. Oh my God, you took my username. Says the grift who stole everything. Luna Sage says, love you all. Press on. Love and light. Blessings. Thank you, Luna. TYT.com/go to press on. Verity says, yay, Amazon TYT. This is going to be a great show. Greetings from Sweden. That's awesome. Justin Anderson says, come on, Cenk. Where's the down goes Parscale? Down goes Parscale. Oh my God, I just did it. Nobody deserves less than that clown. I hear you on that. But that's the thing with grifters. The money's already gone. He's already got it. I know a whole bunch of people in digital media who are giant grifters, but they already took the money and went home. It's so frustrating. Anyway,
Dave Rubin.
We're the knuckleheads who are trying to be honest. Anyway, Kit Yanya says on Twitch, where she's watching, or he, I'm not sure, I donated to TYT.com/go and worried if they tried to announce my name. Sorry, TYT, it's Polish. It's totally okay. Bless your heart. Thank you. Poland, Sweden, all across the world in the country. You guys are the best. We do this show together and we're going to bring you change together. All right, Emma, what's next?
So unidentified federal soldiers, unmarked soldiers, are running rampant throughout the Pacific Northwest. And recently, they have been caught on videotape, basically accosting protesters and regular citizens. Here's a clip of them bringing a protester into an unmarked van. It's scary and disturbing.
What are you doing? Use your words. What are you doing? Use your words. What are you doing?
I haven't done anything
wrong. Use your words. What is going on?
We need to know.
Who are you?
Why are you taking
NLG will get you out. What's your name? Tell us your name.
What's your name?
Okay, you're fine. We'll get you out.
Bro, what?
All right. We got you, friend.
We got you. NLG.
You just violated their rights.
Kidnapping
people.
You just violated their rights.
Thanks for keeping
us.
No.
How are we supposed to know who you are? How are we supposed to know you're not kidnapping us and you're civilians kidnapping us?
Yeah, echoes of Eric Prince type soldiers there where there's no accountability. Federal officials are saying that they're there to combat, quote, violent mayhem. I didn't really see any violence there. And listen to what an anonymous senior official said about these forces. Once we surged federal law enforcement officers to Portland, the agitators quickly got the message. So that just is fascist talk. And they're enabled by the president, who very infamously gas peaceful protesters for a photo op and has repeatedly hinted that he would like to do away with an aspect of the First Amendment that protects peaceful protests and send the military onto protests, protesters, unconstitutional, and one of the most terrifying things that he could possibly do. And some of it, and on a micro level, we're seeing there, Cenk.
Yeah, so there's a couple of disastrous elements of this. First, as I was watching the tape, I actually remembered that I was a person who had a false arrest like that happen to me. And it was unmarked police in my case that arrested us and whisked us away. And that's really scary when they don't identify you and there's identify themselves and there's no badge. So I'll tell that story in the post game for our members, tyt.com/join to become a member. Or if you're watching on YouTube, you could hit the join button below. And at the $4.99 level, you get the post game. So, but let's stick with the important stuff here in terms of the facts on the ground in Portland and Seattle. They've sent in half a dozen federal, apparently departments have sent in their guys. And that van you saw is a rented van, so it's unmarked. You don't know necessarily which department they're with. One of the departments they're using is in charge of, or is often stationed at the U.S.-Mexico border, which makes sense because the Department of Homeland Security is sending these guys in. It does not make sense because I'm pretty sure Portland is nowhere near the U.S.-Mexico border. That unit apparently has also been in Iraq and Afghanistan. I honestly don't know if that's the unit you're looking at in the video because there's half a dozen units and they don't tell you who they are. So now here's giant problem number two. They're not working with state and local officials. So what if there's a situation where the local cops don't agree with unmarked federal officers? I mean, if you're a local cop, you don't even know that they're necessarily federal officers. I mean, they got nice camouflage outfits, like they're in Kandahar. Portland, you know, is a lot of things, but it ain't Kandahar.
Well, Cenk, I thought Trump was a states' rights conservative. Why? And I thought he loved cops. Why is he trampling on the authority of police officers in local areas? I don't understand.
No, but Emma, that's right. And could be really scary. Portland's mayor's like, I don't know who these guys are, and we're not coordinating. So I don't know what they're doing in our streets. So is it conceivable that the police and whatever those guys are draw on each other? It's possible. Look, in my story, it was undercover cops who did not carry badges. So what if they're undercover cops? Or these guys don't come in the full camouflage outfit? Are all six departments coming in camouflage like this? I don't know. And there's a lot of local yokels who have camouflage outfits like this. This is a recipe for disaster, even if it wasn't fascist. But yes, it is fascist to grab people off the streets without identifying who you are and identifying why you're taking them. That's what third world countries do with tin pot dictators.
And we've become so used to this level of militarism that this story isn't even getting the attention that it should. Cenk mentioned that the Portland police chief is frustrated with the situation. I would be if I were him. I don't have the authority to order federal officers, to do things. It does complicate things for us, said Chief Chris Davis of the Portland Department, Portland Police Department. And who these police officers are, no one knows. Among the federal forces deployed in Portland are members of an elite Border Patrol tactical team, a special operations unit that is based on the U.S.-Mexico border and has been deployed overseas, including to Iraq and Afghanistan. BORTAC members, identifiable by patches on their camouflage sleeves, are mixed in with federal protective service officers outside the courthouse. So yeah, there's DHS, task force, cops in here, we think. But you know, that organization, that wing of the government was created in the wake of 9/11. Why are they treating American peaceful protesters like this? This is not the purpose of what that organization, which was supposed to be. And that wasn't, as I mentioned, the only protester that these unmarked officers went after. They also severely wounded a protester who was carrying a speaker, God forbid. 26-year-old Donovan LaBella suffered a fractured skull and required facial reconstruction surgery after he was apparently hit in the head by a less than lethal munition, his mother told the Oregonian. The man is in serious condition at Portland's Legacy Emmanuel Medical Center, a hospital spokeswoman said Monday. And I want to give you guys a graphic warning before we show the video of what happened to this young man. It's tough to watch, but it's important to see. So as you can see there, he was shot in the face by a less than lethal munition, which is likely a rubber bullet. These forces are also using tear gas, which is outlawed in Portland, but doesn't matter. They're the feds, and the Republican states' rights president is sending the feds to violate local and state city laws to just crack down on people in the First Amendment.
Yeah, speaking of the law, the local police have the authority to arrest you under local laws. If you commit theft, you assault someone, those are all local and state issues. So I'm not entirely clear what authority that the federal forces would have to arrest anyone. Theoretically, they could certainly arrest them if they're going after federal statues, like literally, if they were doing something wrong in a federal park. But they seem to be roaming all over these cities. And so are the people that they're putting into these unmarked vehicles, are they even being arrested? Is it on federal charges? What are the federal charges? Are we ever going to find out who fired that rubber bullet into that kid's face? Or are we no longer a democracy and we don't have the right to that information and secret police can shoot us in the face and don't have to reveal themselves? Can they be held accountable? I don't know. We're lawless now. It's, you know, and look, this is when the brown shirt started. They didn't report to the normal hierarchy. They reported only to the guy who would eventually become dictator. And so once you have these renegade quasi-military forces that are outside of the law, you could do anything you want and get away with it. So if people are asking, hey, you know, we've heard so many times this nonsense about, oh, this is the most important election of our lifetimes, et cetera. No, this ain't like the other ones. Trump is an existential threat. What you're seeing in Portland right there in those videos, if he had a whole nother 4 years, that would be the tip of the iceberg.
Yep, it's absolutely chilling. On to his opponent in the general election, presumptive nominee Joe Biden. So Joe Biden is giving us whiplash because you can give him credit for proposing something fairly progressive and listening to people on his team now, his advisory boards like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez or Varshini Prakash of the Sunrise Movement. But then he goes on local TV and says conservative things and just burns the goodwill that he has with the progressive community or is trying to accumulate. So on Tuesday, anchor Jamie Bowl of North Carolina's WBTV asked Biden about recent ads that the Trump campaign has been running. The president's campaign is running an ad here in North Carolina. It essentially says if you win, crime calls will go unanswered because you support defunding the police, Bowl said, and asked, where do you stand on that issue? That has never been my position. It is not my position now, Biden said. Where I stand on it is police have to clean up their act. The only thing that will happen if police don't meet standards is they'll lose some federal funding. In another interview with Arizona's KPNX, Biden brought up the issue unprompted. Asked how his thinking on policing has changed since the 1994 crime bill, Biden said, well, it hasn't changed a whole lot in the sense that I don't think we should be defunding police departments. I think we should be holding police departments responsible by doing what? Because one way to hold them responsible would be to take away their military toys and all of the excess funding that they use to crack down on black and brown people specifically in this country.
All right, there's two very disturbing things in there. One is talking about increasing funding for the police. Look, I get that defunding the police is a tough slogan for a presidential candidate to get behind. I had issues with it in the beginning as a slogan. And they, you know, they want to get Trump out of office. They want to be safe. I understand that, right? And so some of you might say, no, I want Biden or any Democratic candidate to say defund the police. They're not going to say that. The vice presidential candidate, when that's announced, when that person is announced, also will not say it. But that's one thing. It's another thing to say, no, I want to increase their funding. You know, under the auspices and the guise of, I'll bring in some psychologists and stuff like that. Well, okay, then you're saying you're not really going to change anything. They're like, oh, they should be nicer. That's not a thing. You can't enforce they should be nicer. And that just means I'm not really going to do anything about it. And I'll probably, under the pressure of the police union, even funnel them more money. Okay, so that's Biden. He's the one saying. And then the second part is him talking about, oh, 94 crime bill. I haven't changed much at all. Yeah, the 94 crime bill is the one that locked up millions of fellow Americans under total garbage reasoning. You know, we talked about on the show a couple of days ago, they locked up millions of people for just marijuana possession, took away their freedom and ruined their lives and their ability to get a job afterwards, took away years of their liberty and largely targeted minorities. And after all these years, some folks who signed on the 94 crime bill have profusely apologized and said it led to reincarceration of black people in this country to the point where at one point black males in prison were more than black males during slavery. So it was just an abomination. And Biden thinks, yeah, rock and roll, I still like it. Well, he was one of the principal authors of it. So he hasn't changed. He's a conservative. He's always been conservative. So the election is between a right winger and a monster. So maybe Biden's not a monster, but he's definitely a right winger.
I think there's this real phenomenon with him, and I noticed it in the primary, where when he feels he's being criticized, he doubles, triples down. I mean, Cenk, you saw, it still sticks out in my mind when Elizabeth Warren was talking about the CFPB and he just lashes out at her and goes, I got you those votes, and screams in her face, which was entirely counterfactual and didn't make sense. He's extremely touchy when he thinks he's being criticized, even when he was just trying to tee up his old position there. Or the reporter was just teeing him up to answer a question, I mean, and he just doubles, triples down. It's kind of Trumpian in that way. But the flip side of it is that when he has people in the room that he can talk to, he can be empathetic when it's not in public and things like that, in media interviews, because you're seeing the things that he's proposing. It could all be BS, I have no idea, but they are way more progressive, and someone like Bernie Sanders seems to have faith in him. So presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden on Tuesday outlined an updated climate plan seeking to invest $2 trillion to boost clean energy and rebuild infrastructure. The proposal is the second plank of his new economic agenda called Build Back Better, which he first detailed last week in Pennsylvania. Biden's Build Back Better plan is not a tongue twister, but an aggressive economic recovery proposal to lift the United States out of its pandemic-induced depression. If enacted, it would be the biggest federal investment in American manufacturing since World War II, the heaviest hand in government job creation since the Great Depression. Biden's climate initiative calls to chart the United States on an irreversible path to net zero carbon emissions by 2050, which is way too late. But to do that, the plan would aim to achieve a carbon pollution-free power sector by 2035. It would also upgrade 4 million buildings and weatherize 2 million homes over 4 years to increase energy efficiency. And the proposal, Biden's campaign said, would seek to shift major cities toward public transportation and create millions of good union jobs, rebuilding America's crumbling infrastructure. So that did include elements of the Green New Deal there, creating jobs while building clean energy infrastructure, which is going to be especially important in order to recover from the economic hole that Republicans and corporate Democrats are putting us in the middle of this pandemic, with giveaways to corporations, to wealthy people. I mean, Kudlow and Trump are trying to do a capital gains tax cut right now, which only helps wealthy people. So Biden does understand the urgency of the moment in that sense, and he is listening to progressives. But when you challenge him on himself personally in his old positions, I'm kind of psychoanalyzing him here, but I think I'm onto something. He gets so defensive and he triples down. I mean, there's no way to defend the crime bill. And then the neoliberal fantasy of, if we just give cops more money, then they'll be nicer because then they'll have more money and they'll appreciate us and they'll have more resources. That's lunacy as well. That's just a dumb position.
Yeah. So, Emma, I think your psychological analysis is actually pretty good, especially on the empathy count. I think Joe Biden has empathy for anyone who's in the room. I think it's genuine. The problem is he spends almost all of his time in rooms filled with millionaire donors. So he has tremendous empathy for them. And that's why I think the task force is important. I know it's much derided by a lot of people, but there are real progressives on that task force. And it forces Biden and his team to be in a room with them and perhaps just against all odds listen to them. And in this case, they did. And when they did on the environmental and the infrastructure issues, what progressives say is so logical that it'd be madness to do otherwise. So why do I say that? Because the $2 trillion that they're going to spend to rebuild the energy infrastructure of this country, what does it do? One, it makes progressives very happy because it goes towards Green New Deal and rebuilding energy infrastructure and saving the planet, and it's absolutely necessary. Two, it creates a ton of new jobs when we need a ton of new jobs. People are trying to figure out a way to wrap their head around how can we create millions of jobs? Well, this makes so much sense. Everybody gets it. Oh, I get it. Like Eisenhower built the highways, Biden is going to build the energy infrastructure, and he's going to need a lot of people to do it. And the third thing that it checks off, as you saw in that statement, is the unions. So that's a huge constituency for the Democratic Party. And he's saying, don't worry, they're going to be good union jobs. So everybody's going, yes, see, we told you progressives have practical ideas that are both politically popular and practical to do. So he takes one of those ideas and runs with it. Fantastic. So look, we do nuance on this show. So when he's wrong about the crime bill and when he's wrong about the police, we call him out. And yes, and sometimes in harsh terms. And when he's right about the environment, energy, and infrastructure, we're thrilled to have him be right and give him credit for that. Now, of course, the last thing is he actually going to do it? Is all the reason in the world to do it? But one of the lobbyists at the end of one of these articles talking about it said, we'll see, he's campaigning. But if he wins, we'll get in there and we'll get him to change his mind.
Yeah, well, that's so really quickly, why I think it is a really fascinating dichotomy between Hillary Clinton, who was, I think, more to the left politically than Joe Biden, but more vitriolically against progressives and activists on the left, is that it's so key who would be in Biden's team, because it's for the exact phenomenon we're discussing, Cenk. If you have some people in the room, maybe he can legislate in a more progressive way.
Yeah, well, then I got to say it. If Elizabeth Warren's in the room, he's going to be much tougher on banks at a minimum. If Kamala Harris is in the room, she's going to be like, yeah, what are we doing for the donors? So that's going to make a giant difference. It just is.
I don't think he's going to pick her, but we'll see.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
All right, we got to take a break, guys. More drama. important news, really important news about, unfortunately, racial discrimination and the PPP and still out there in the streets with the cops, as well as some light news as well. We'll be right back.
At TYT, we frequently talk about all the ways that big tech companies are taking control of our online lives, constantly monitoring us and storing and selling our data. But that doesn't mean we have to let them. It's possible to stay anonymous online and hide your data from the prying eyes of big tech. And one of the best ways is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN hides your IP address, making your active ID more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. And it's also easy to install. A single mouse click protects all your devices. But listen, guys, this is important. ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired magazine. So take back control of your life online and secure your data with a top VPN solution available, ExpressVPN. And if you go to expressvpn.com/TYT, you can get 3 extra months for free with this exclusive link just for TYT fans. That's expressvpn.com/TYT. Check it out today.
All right, Bangladesh Church, Aspirations, a financial institution that actually cares. They just passed 1 million trees planted. That's a hell of a thing. Let's make it 1,000,010 every time you sign up. The 10 trees get planted. Save money, save the planet. Aspiration.com/TYT. Okay, now I go to our members. CDC says, thank you for covering this. What has been going on in Portland is insane. The videos on hashtag Portland protests are terrifying. Lawlessness. I bathe in a very stable genius's tears, says, leaving things unmarked allows these federal agencies to play the shell game with everyone they round up. It could be days, weeks, or months before anyone knows which agency grabbed them, much less be able to find out where they are taken. Then I go to YouTube Super Chat. Roslyn Studios says, super excited for my We Press On t-shirt. Also, it's under my real name, which is also Polish, so I also apologize. What are you apologizing for? Strange, unpronounceable foreign names for? Jank Uger? Try that one on for size. Anyway, Roslyn Studios, I remember when you first signed up and I saw your name. Thank you. We really appreciate it. And let's check the thermometer at tyt.com/go. Of course, what they're referring to is that $127, you get a free press-on t-shirt, which is super badass and has that great mark. Mike on it, 58,516. Can I see 59,000? All right, tyt.com/go. But I want to give two more comments about Portland. Dr. Zippy McScoots writes in on YouTube Super Chat. That's dangerous. I'm a 3-time combat vet. If unmarked armed people tried putting me in an unmarked van, I'm pretty sure I'd pull my gun. This is not smart. So, wow. And then last one's from Twitter. Trump is occupied Portland. That's their handle. Says, Young Turks member living in Portland. Our police are wearing traditional uniforms. These Trump goons arrested people who were giving free food to protesters. So what's happening in Portland is totally insane. We'll keep covering it for you guys. Back to Emma.
After a debate with a Trump spokesperson, Chuck Todd made a ludicrous claim about MSNBC and their coverage. Let's take a look.
We will have the brand new NBC News Wall Street Journal poll will be unveiled today at 5 p.m. on Meet the Press Daily. And just a reminder, for what it's worth, there is no editorial point of view here on any of these newscasts on MSNBC in the daytime.
Curious. Well, obviously, the Trump campaign spokesperson was making ridiculous claims and was accusing the media of bias in ways that don't make any sense. But progressives know that MSNBC and Chuck Todd specifically has a very distinct point of view, a reminder of what he said about Bernie Sanders supporters just some months ago.
Hey, I want to bring up something that Jonathan Last put in the Bulwark today, and it was about how, and Ruth, we've all been on the receiving end of the Bernie online brigade. And here's what he says. He says, no other candidate has anything like this sort of digital brown shirt brigade. I mean, except for Donald Trump. The question no one is asking is this. What if you can't win the presidency without an online mob?
Awesome, conflating Bernie and Trump there. And Bernie Sanders is the most prominent Jewish presidential candidate we've had in a long time. calling his supporters brown shirts because they have principles. And oh no, they're mean to the elites when we have terrible news coverage. Wow, I my heart weeps for you.
But remember, Emma, they have no point of view whatsoever.
Thank you.
The official objective view is that 2 + 2 = 4 and Bernie Sanders supporters are Nazis. Well, hey, it's just MSNBC. That's it. Well, all they do is report the news. So, look, in all seriousness, they're so biased they can't see their bias. They genuinely believe that their status quo protecting establishment point of view is the truth. So, like on the Young Turks, we fight for the truth and we tell you we're doing our best and we're being honest with you and we're trying to get at the truth. And some things are indisputable. 2 + 2 does = 4. Okay. Vaccines are not going to implant microchips so Bill Gates can follow you and Tom Hanks can pull you into a basement. Okay, there are facts in the world. But MSNBC and Chuck Todd often present their policy opinions as facts. It's not just in the statements, it's in the questions. So when we talk about tax cuts, there's never the question of how are you going to pay for that? Because the tax cuts go to them and their friends, right? When it gets to healthcare for every American, which every other civilized developed country does, they turn around and say, how are you going to pay for that? And he's like, what? I just asked a question. I don't think I've ever heard, other than when I used to be a comment on MSNBC or a question that Nancy Pelosi herself wouldn't have written.
Well, all they're doing is calling balls and smears, Cenk. Oh, wait. Yeah. No, I mean, I he's trying to make a distinction with the daytime coverage there. Dude, you're on in the daytime. I mean, and we just saw that clip. I don't even know how to get through to them at this point. They're all in their own bubble. And it's sickening, to be honest.
No. To be fair, the guy who said that Bernie Sanders would round up rich people and shoot them in Central Park was Chris Matthews, and that was in primetime, not daytime, which is vastly different in MSNBC. And so he's now been replaced by Joy Reid, who is perhaps the only person more opposed to progressives on all of cable news than Chris Matthews.
Well, she just tweeted that she's warming to Medicare for All. Now that Bernie Sanders is no longer a threat to be president, she can come out with her true opinion and say, oh, okay, single payer might be all right.
Oh, wow. How magnanimous of her. Is she not merciful? So, Chuck, you don't realize it, but you're in the middle of groupthink and you think the status quo in the establishment is awesome and you smear everyone who isn't. You definitely have a point of view. You just privilege it as the one that everyone should have. And that's why people don't like media and they can't stand the establishment media and you may find it unbearable. So, oh my God, am I a brigade, an online brigade? Okay, all right, guys, an amazing post game where we're gonna tell you about how PPP might've discriminated against black business owners. TYT.com/join, join button below, we'll see you there.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.